This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Ridgwick with New Day Dawning. Welcome to Radio Tyneside, hospital and community radio on 93.6 FM, Ospedia Channel 1 and online.
I'm getting ready for a new day dawning. I'm getting ready for a brand new morning. Packing my bags for a heavenly journey. I can't wait to be there. No, I can't wait to be there.
Our programme today is a continuation of last week's interview with Gay Keenaghan, formerly known as Gabrielle Weiss, a child refugee. Gay was only 12 years old when she was saved by aid agencies, many of them Quakers and Roman Catholics, who had persuaded the British government to rescue 10,000 Jewish children, aged between 3 and 17, from the clutches of the Nazis just before World War II began. Her Catholic mother had died. Her Jewish father had been arrested and was later sent to Auschwitz. But Gay was taken to safety by her grandmother, who had raised the money for her to be put on board a train in Vienna at midnight, along with many other traumatised children. The scheme was known as the Kinder Transport, the children's transport. The children had no knowledge of where they were going as they said goodbye to their relatives. Everyone had been warned by the Gestapo not to show any emotion as the train pulled away. Many of these children sadly never saw their families again, as they were later deported to East and murdered. In last week's programme, Gay shared how traumatic this whole experience had been for her, and this week we take up her story as the Kinder Transport moves on from Holland, a place where the children had experienced great kindness and sympathy and lots of food. But first, let's listen to a song chosen by Gay herself. Gay, can you choose a piece of music for us?
Well, could I choose Edelweiss? It's one of my favourite songs, and my husband used to sit at the organ and play Edelweiss and say, "I'm just playing this for you."
So coming back to you leaving Holland, where did we go on the train journey from there?
Well, we were taken off the train at the Hook of Holland and taken down to the harbour where we were going to go on a ship and go across the channel. And that was a very strange experience because I had never seen so much water in all my life, coming from a landlocked country. And we were told that we were going across the water to the other side. Well, I had seen lakes and rivers, but you could always see the other side. You could always see the land on the other side. And suddenly we saw all this water and we couldn't see land on the other side. So it was a bit frightening. It was quite frightening, in fact. But however, we boarded the ship and luckily we had a very calm day to cross the channel. So we crossed the channel from the Hook of Holland to Harwich in England.
Harwich. And from Harwich, what happened then?
Well, in Harwich we were met by various representatives from different organisations, and I was met by a lady from the Catholic Committee for Refugees. They had formed, the Catholic Church had formed a committee to help refugees. And but this is where the difficulty started, because although she looked very kind, and she, I'm sure she was, well, she I did find over the years that she was the kindest person you could meet. But she couldn't speak German and I couldn't speak English. And that was a very difficult situation. We had to try and communicate by sign language and body language. And, you know, being a child, it was even probably more difficult than I would have found it had I been a little bit older. But she actually, we all boarded a train at Harwich, and we were all taken to Liverpool Street Station in London. That was the end of the journey. That was the end of the Kindertransport. So during the time of the Kindertransport, 10,000 children landed at Liverpool Street Station. And today there's a lovely monument outside.
Really? I didn't know that.
I'll show you a photo.
A monument of children?
Of children with suitcases. And the monument has little plaques all around it with the names of the various cities from which these children came.
Yes. So you soon picked the language up, though. Children are very resilient. They're very able to pick up languages, aren't they?
Well, I was met eventually. I was taken to a place in Aldershot and met by a couple who were going to give me a home. And they took me to a little school in Aldershot. And I think I learned that the teachers couldn't speak German and I couldn't speak English. I was given a very simple reading book and a German-English dictionary. And I think it's, they were sort of saying to me, teachers have English. But I learned more from my peers than I learned. The children in that school were fantastic. I really learned my language from the children in that school.
As is the case with many refugees today, the children are very fluent in the language going to school, and their peers are teaching them, and they're better than their parents at the language.
Yeah.
So what happened then?
I was quite happy there. I wrote to my grandmother every week, and my grandmother wrote to me every week. Because I found writing paper in the bottom of my case, which really shouldn't have been there, because we were supposed to only have clothes in the case. Life was strange, but I had so much to learn that I think I was homesick a little bit, but not very much, because I had to learn so much. And I was determined that I was going to do well. So I had to learn not only the language, but I had to learn all the imperial measurements, because I only knew metricated measurements. And okay. I suddenly had to learn that 12 pence made a shilling and 20 shillings made a pound and 16 ounces made a pound.
Do all those long division sums and long multiplications.
So I had to unlearn a great deal that I had learned at school in Vienna and had to start again. So I was very, very busy. But then came the 3rd of September. This was, don't forget, I started school in beginning of May 1939. I went to the school, and September the 3rd, the war broke out, and all communication with my grandmother ceased. And I found a great change in the home that I was in, because my foster father was called up in. He was a regular army officer, and he left home immediately the war broke out. He was sent to some other place, and I think my foster mother resented that and resented me a little bit, and I wasn't treated very well after that.
So your life was made bearable by your grandmother's letters. The Bible talks about people who are on the lookout and pray constantly. Isaiah 62 verse 6 calls them the watchmen. It says, "On your walls, O Jerusalem, I have appointed watchmen all day and all night. They will never keep silent. And no doubt, Gay, your Christian grandmother was one of those watchmen. Let's listen to a Jewish song based upon this reading. It's called On Your Walls, O Jerusalem, sung here by Barry and Batia Sagal. Go about swapping foster parents? Was that possible?
Well, somebody, and I don't know who, actually reported the matter. They suspected what was happening, went to the head teacher of the school I was in, and the head teacher in turn got in touch with the Catholic Committee for Refugees, and the lady who had met me at Harwich came to Aldershot to see me and was surprised how well we could communicate with each other. And I told her what was happening, and she promised to find me another home, which she did.
So she placed you elsewhere?
Yes.
Where did you go then?
I went to a convent in Ashford in Kent.
Yes.
The Sisters of Notre Dame. And it was a boarding school, and I was very happy there, very happy. They treated me very well. I still was sad because I had no contact with my grandmother, but I understood that that was, the war prohibited that. And I was very lucky because the education I received at the convent was excellent.
I suppose war was even more frightening in your case because it must have crossed your mind, the Germans are coming here to get me too, in this place where I'm safe now.
No, it never crossed my mind. No, and now that I never thought of that. I felt completely safe in England.
I'm very grateful to the United Kingdom for rescuing me.
Yes, for having me.
I'd imagine.
And it never occurred to me. But then, my 16th birthday, after my 16th birthday, the lady from the Catholic Committee for Refugees once more came to see me with bad news. And immediately I thought, has something happened to my grandmother and she's heard? But of course she hadn't, because the war was still on and there were no communication. The bad news was that as I had reached my 16th birthday, I had reached an age where I was considered to be an alien. Before that, I was a child, now I was an alien. And at that time, even the word alien was alien to me because I wasn't quite sure what it meant. And she explained it to me and she said, you see, we've got friendly aliens and enemy aliens. And unfortunately, because the Austrian people on the whole welcomed Hitler into their country, you're considered an enemy alien.
So from being a munchling, a mongrel, you go to being an enemy alien.
And
that must have been so distressing for you.
Well, as such, I couldn't stay at the school. I had to leave. And I was so happy there. I had to leave the school and be placed elsewhere again. I couldn't stay there. It was a restricted area because it was quite close to the channel. And in those days, there was the fear that Hitler might come across the channel and invade England. And as an enemy alien, I might have been a danger to somebody, I don't know.
So from being this enemy alien, where does an enemy alien go from there, Gay?
Well, this enemy alien was placed in yet another convent in Mill Hill in London, and I was there for 2 years being trained as a nursery nurse, and it was the St. Vincent's Nursery Training College. I spent 2 happy years there. Not only was I trained to be a nursery nurse, but also they ran a course of Montessori teaching.
So
although I wanted, that was my aim, to become a teacher, I didn't really want to be a nursery nurse. But it was the beginning of my sort of way towards my career. And I completed the course, and the nuns from Mill Hill had a place for me in a family in Surrey who were very, very nice people, and I looked after 3 young children in that family. But I was with them at the end of the war, and they were extremely kind to me, inasmuch that the gentleman of the house worked in the Home Office, and he realized that by this time I needed to become a British subject, and he made all the arrangements for me to become a British subject before my 21st birthday, because after my 21st birthday it would have cost me quite a lot of money to become naturalized. But I became naturalized at no cost to myself, with the help of my employer. And the lady of the house, when eventually I was with them for 3 years, she actually had contacts in the northeast of England, and managed to secure a place for me in a teacher training college.
So at last your feet were on a rock.
On a rock,
and
yes.
You were experiencing some measure of peace and contentment at last.
Definitely.
Was this your happiest moment?
My happiest moment then was, I wrote to my grandmother, and the letter was returned. I was very sad. And then 2 weeks later, I received a letter from Vienna, and I recognized my grandmother's handwriting.
So she was still alive.
She was still alive, and she had been in touch with the Catholic. At the end of the war, she had had the resourcefulness to get in touch with the Catholic Committee for Refugees, who gave her my address.
So she was searching for you?
She was searching for me. I was searching for her. She had been bombed out, so she was no longer where I had sent the letter to. Therefore, it was returned to me. But she had searched for me and had found me. And for a number of years, of course, we just corresponded, because I was unable to travel and she was unable to travel. But eventually, in 1951, we were reunited. I traveled to Vienna.
What was that like, to see your grandmother again after all those years?
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
And did you recognize each other? Did she recognize you?
I don't know.
Changed the most.
I don't know whether she recognized me, but obviously recognized her, yes. It was fantastic.
And did you ever think, I'll live with my grandmother now, or can she come over to me?
No, because I had already met my future husband by that time. And I was engaged to be married. So I knew that my life was going to be in England.
Yes.
But all the years, she lived 30 years after the war. She survived the war. She lived till 1975.
Really?
And
you kept in touch with her all that time?
We went every year to Vienna.
Oh,
she met not only my husband, she met her great-grandchildren as well, because I had 2 children in the meantime whom she met. And
so she lived to see the fruit of her labour, really, didn't she?
Yes.
Did you meet your husband before the war ended or after the war ended?
After the war ended.
After the war. Can you remember the war ending?
Oh, yes.
Can you?
Yes. I stood in front of Buckingham Palace on VE Day. I've got the most vivid memories of that. I was working in Surrey with the family, and we were given a day. I was given a day's holiday, and some other friends in the village were going up to London for the day, and I went with them. We stood in front of Buckingham Palace, and there was the King and the Queen, Princess Margaret and Princess Elizabeth, and people were singing and cheering and dancing. It was the most memorable occasion, and I felt absolutely uplifted until I thought about my grandmother. Yes. That's when I thought, oh, my grandmother. And that's when I went back and wrote my first letter to her.
Yes. I would just like to ask you to finish. In all that time, from the early age to that moment, did you at all find that you thought God had deserted you? Did you ever lose your faith? How did you maintain that faith?
Well, I think my faith was maintained because I spent so much time with in convents. It was a convent that I was sent to after I left Aldershot, and it was a convent I went to from one convent to another, and I saw the life of the nuns, and I know that some people have thought of nuns as being quite cruel sometimes, and I have heard stories, but I have met nothing but kindness. I was in a convent in Vienna, I was in two convents in England, and I met nothing but kindness from the nuns, and I think that sort of kept my faith, because the people were, I saw God through them.
That's lovely. So, Gay, you maintained your Roman Catholic faith. Did you ever think to explore the roots of your father's Jewish faith?
Not really. I did try to find out what happened to my father, and I do possess a letter from Jerusalem saying that his details are in the Holocaust Museum in Jerusalem. But I think the Catholic faith, the Christian faith, was so instilled into me that it never entered my head to explore the Jewish faith. But I have, since only latterly, I have joined the Association of Jewish Refugees, and I've been several times to a synagogue in Gosforth. And actually, I'm going there next Sunday. As a member of the association, I've been invited to go and see a film of a person who made many anti-Semitic remarks, only to find out later that he was Jewish. So I'm looking forward to seeing that film. And I do have great sympathy towards the Jews, possibly because of my background. But the actual faith, the things they believe, I have never really gone into. I don't know why.
Your father was in a ghetto, you found out, in Lodz.
My father, yes.
And he went on to Auschwitz, is that right?
Yes. Yes, my father, I learned from a source in Vienna, the Jewish embassy, that my father was deported to a Jewish ghetto in Lodz in Poland. And when I, 3 years ago, visited Auschwitz, I learned that all the people from that Jewish ghetto ended up in Auschwitz. And as my father didn't return from a concentration camp, we had to assume that he was exterminated when he went to Auschwitz.
Thank you so much, Gay Keenigan, for taking time to be with us today to share your harrowing experiences. It's important that people in our world today should hear such accounts and learn lessons from them. I think your story will have moved our listeners. It certainly has moved me. Our programme today was an insight into the life of Austrian child refugee Gay Keenigan, formerly known as Gabrielle Weiss, a retired schoolteacher living in the northeast of England. I'd like to pay tribute to her by ending the programme today with one of her favourite hymns. Here is How Great Thou Art, with Aled Jones at the Songs of Praise Big Sing. Thank you so much for listening. Bye for now.
O Lord, my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the works thy hand hath made, I see the stars, I hear the mighty thunder, thy power throughout the universe displayed. Then sings my soul, my Savior God to me, how great thou art, how great thou art. Then sings my soul,